we will have California attorney Greg Glaser with us. Greg comes on about once a month and has just really insightful information and research about vaccines and your rights in martial law and health rights generally and historically. We explored recently, last time he was on, what was it, the Jacobson v. Massachusetts case, 1905 Supreme Court case, which is really the seminal vaccine case, the case about that kind of sets the foundation and framework legally for all vaccine policy and law that has followed since then. And perhaps we'll get into that some more next week. But in any event, tune in next week. So you'll have be hearing from me, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, our co-host Debbie Brook, I believe, will be back next week as well, and also attorney Greg Glaser, constitutional law attorney from California, to tell us, help inform us more about history and in-depth about how the law works and our rights. Always a great discussion when Greg is on. You can call during the live show with your questions or comments, and that number is area code 347-324-3704. That's, again, area code 347-324-3704, and that number is at the top of the freedomizerradio.com website, if you didn't have anything to write that down with. And you're also welcome to email me during the week if you have questions. And if I have time, I'll get to them on the show if I'm able to. Try to do that whenever I can. You can reach me at the email address, attorney at vaccinerights.com. That's attorney at vaccinerights.com. And my contact information, phone number, and email is at the top of every page of my main website, which is vaccinerights.com, vaccinerights.com. I'm going to go on to another article here. This comes from Kyoto News International. I believe this is news about Japan. And the article title is Countermeasures Against H7N9, another flu virus. Countermeasures against H7N9 enforced. So the Japanese government recently enforced countermeasures against this strain, it's a kind of bird flu, the H7N9, under which patients can be compelled to be hospitalized or stop working for up to 2 years. Then they did this in the face of supposedly rapid spread of this virus in China and at a time when many tourists go overseas at the end of Japan's what they call their Golden Week holidays from late April to early May and come back. And so a lot of them are in China coming back. So these new measures are based on Japanese infectious disease law under which the government can designate infectious diseases as likely to seriously affect human health. They can designate an infectious disease as likely to seriously affect human health. And then they can, once they've done that, they can introduce emergency measures without going through ordinary procedures. Now, this is a concept that is very much alive and well and central to American law and American legal systems as well, too. And it boils down to this basic concept that when there's an emergency, all bets are off. In other words, you have whatever rights you have until there's an emergency, and then all of a sudden your rights can evaporate quickly. And I tell you, in the vaccine arena, that's particularly troubling because if you have any doubts about routine immunization, then you're going to have even more doubts about an emergency vaccine that is what they call fast-tracked. That is, it has much less and maybe even no clinical trials, they manufacture it quickly, they skip some of these steps under the pretense, which theoretically could be perfectly reasonable, but given the way politics works in this issue, is highly suspect. The basic concept is valid, but the implementation in any given instance is something we have to look at very closely. But under the guise that, of course, if it's an emergency, you need to act fast to save lives, and when you're talking about a serious infectious disease, that's a valid concern. But we have gone to extremes with that in this country with laws I talked about earlier around the country that can require people to get emergency vaccines, whether they want it or not, to quarantine people in government facilities, whether they're agreeable to that or not, when there are other measures that are probably more effective, a lot safer, and a lot less costly. When I mentioned homeoprophylaxis earlier, what I didn't mention was the incident in Cuba a few years ago where in dealing with a fever disease there called leptospirosis, they used homeoprophylaxis, that's homeopathic remedies in the same function as immunizations. They used homeoprophylaxis on with 2.5 million people. So it wasn't some little study of 25 people where you wonder how it works in the real world. This was a real world study. 2.5 million people got two doses each of a homeopathic remedy. They had substantially better results than had ever been had with immunizations. It was 1/15 the cost, a tiny fraction of the cost of standard immunizations. And no side effects. You don't have people injured and killed from homeoprophylaxis. You know, I talked to a homeopathic physician once. I said, are there any serious side effects from, in fact, I think I just said, are there any adverse effects from homeopathy? And he paused for a second and thought, and he said, you know, there's some rare instances where people will have a nosebleed after a homeopathic remedy, and we're not really sure why that happens. And so I'm thinking to myself, let me see. Nosebleed, permanent disability. Nosebleed, death. Nosebleed, autism. Neurological or immunological dysfunction. You know, I think I'm going to go with the nosebleed risk there. You know, given a choice. And if it's going to be a fraction of the cost, that's pretty strong incentive too. You would think, if our public health systems here in the U.S. were designed to maximize health and safety, that they would be all over this homeoprophylaxis thing. When you've got an example right next door to us in Cuba that's that huge, 2.5 million people, when they use regular immunizations, they would have, you know, some hundred or whatever cases of the disease anyway. They'd have some number of deaths, you know, they'll still have at least a handful of people, 10, 12, whatever, a number of people will still die from the disease. When they used the homeoprophylaxis in the fall of 2008, they had something like, I don't know, 10 cases of the disease or something and no deaths. No one died. And no one suffered any adverse effects from the homeopathic remedies. I don't have figures on what the adverse effects of immunizations have been in Cuba from the immunization for this fever disease, leptospirosis. But anytime you administer vaccines broadly, you have some number of injuries and deaths that occur as a result of that. That's just the reality of vaccines. So obviously there's something deeply flawed in our healthcare systems, and the short answer there is that it's driven by pharmaceutical profits, not by maximizing health of the public. So that's the reality. What do we do about that? Well, we have to be informed, stay informed, keep the conversations going, bring awareness to the best of our ability to more and more people, but ultimately we've got to make changes in the law. And the best way I know to participate in the vaccine legislative process is through the National Vaccine Information Center's advocacy portal. It is available on the web at nvicadvocacy.org, NVIC for National Vaccine Information Center, nvicadvocacy.org. And if you'll go there, you'll see a list of pending bills around the country that have to do with vaccines. But you can also sign up, and it doesn't cost anything to sign up. And if you sign up and plug in your information, which is kept private and confidential, but then they can use that information to tell you who your representatives are and what their contact emails and phone numbers are. In other words, they make it as easy as possible for you to participate in the legislative process. And can send you alerts when there's an action item in your state. So it's a terrific system, what I refer to as the vaccine legislative infrastructure, internet infrastructure, for participating effectively in vaccine legislative activism. So I encourage everyone who has any concern at all about vaccines, even if you're not immediately and directly affected, because guess what, folks? Even if you're not immediately and directly affected, you're going to be. The Federal Department of Health and Human Services has a goal in what they call their 2020 initiative of immunizing all the healthcare workers in the country. They have a separate goal of immunizing all adults in the country. And there are bills in a couple of states that want to create tracking systems for adults. They want to know whether when you were last vaccinated with the 250 vaccines that are available now. Now, I'm being a little facetious when I say that, but I'm also not being facetious because there are right now 250 vaccines either in clinical trials or already waiting for approval by the FDA. 250. Why are there 250 vaccines? Do we have 250 infectious childhood diseases that need to be treated? Of course not. But there are vaccines for anything and everything you can think of. There's a vaccine being developed for autism because it's been found that autistic children tend to have colonies of particular kinds of bacteria in their gut, and so we're going to give people a vaccine so they won't get that bacteria in their gut, and that supposedly is going to prevent autism. Personally, I think they got that one backwards. I think the bacteria are not the cause of the condition. They're a symptom. And the cause is the vaccines, other vaccines. You're not going to prevent vaccine damage with another vaccine. But that's what they tried to do with the polio vaccine. You see, in the early 40s, 1940s, the pertussis vaccine was introduced. And there are studies in three different countries, U.S., Britain, and Australia, that showed that prior to the introduction of the polio vaccine, when we had the polio epidemics, that there were something like four times as many children who had paralytic polio who were vaccinated with the pertussis vaccine than there were children not vaccinated with the pertussis vaccine, and they tended to have paralysis in the limb that they were vaccinated in. If that's not a telltale sign that the pertussis vaccine was at least a major contribution to the polio epidemics in the late 40s and very early 50s. I don't know what is. But again, like much other research, that doesn't get discussed. It gets suppressed. It gets discredited because not because it isn't good research, but because it doesn't meet a preconceived outcome or position about how wonderful vaccines are. So this is the world we live in. But let me move on here, reel myself back in, because there's several different article topics I want to get to here. There's another article. This comes from the BBC News and Health News, and this is an article where they're pointing out how Somali immigrants in the UK and the US have fears about autism. As well they should, because these populations tend to have higher rates of autism than the surrounding populations where they live. And so the health officials are saying that vaccination rates against measles in particular are, from their point of view, worryingly low among Somali children in the U.S. and U.K., because parents still believe that the MMR jab, as they call it in Britain, is linked to autism. Officials say they are struggling to show that the vaccine is safe. The struggle is a really good word choice there, because, you know, you're going to struggle to show that the sun doesn't shine, and because it does. And officials can come up with information that supports a position that vaccines don't cause autism, but that's only because the truth about the vaccine autism connection has been systematically and proactively suppressed and denied. for many, many years. There's just more and more evidence pointing in that same direction. I could go down a long list here. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we know that a nonprofit, the Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs, back in 2011, got information through the Freedom of Information Act, had emails from the CDC and study authors showing that the CDC knew that vaccines caused autism, and they decided not to publish the data, and instead they published a study claiming that vaccines don't cause autism. I'm not a criminal law attorney, but that sure sounds like criminal fraud to me. Withholding information that you know is going to result in death and disability, avoidable disability, death and disability from people all over the world getting this vaccine, and you're going to conveniently not publish it. Not only are you not going to publish it, you're going to publish a study that claims exactly the opposite of what that data says. There have just been, you know, more and more problems in this arena that come out. In April of 2011, Paul Thorson, a fellow who was hired by the CDC to pull together studies to show that vaccines don't cause autism, and he was one of the study authors on this other study I just told you about. Dr. Thorson, if we can even call the man a doctor, I think that's a title unbefitting somebody of his character, or lack of character, but he was indicted on 13 counts of fraud with the CDC and 9 counts, I think, of money laundering. These are the kind of people who are working for the federal government to support the pharmaceutical position that vaccines are safe because if they're not, we won't make billions of dollars on them. And I'm sorry, no amount of money is worth the unnecessary disabling of any child or adult or any person's life. Money, lives do not have a monetary value, not in a sane, healthy, civilized world. But in the pharmaceutical world, they have it's very profitable to consider human life, humans to be expendable, that the quality of life or even the very life and death issue is something that you can somehow justify because of the billions of dollars you're going to make by disregarding that. So I'm not a mental health professional. I'm certainly not talking about any specific individual at this point. But when I say that the system is run by psychopaths, that's just my way of saying that the people who run this have to have some kind of serious mental health deficiency or they wouldn't be doing the things that they're doing. And we need to understand, and regardless of what the precise labels would be, if we could get proper diagnoses and come up with precise labels, the underlying point is quite clear and crystal clear. When you allow a system to be run by people who feel that human lives are expendable, it's not a good system. It's a dysfunctional system. It's a horrifically evil system. I try to stay away from sensationalism and broad generalizations, but I just don't know any other word for it. It's evil, and it needs to be revealed. It needs to have a light shone on it, and that's what, among other things, we try to do on this show. Speaking of the resistance, discomfort in the Somali community with the idea of getting the MMR vaccine in particular. By the way, when the MMR vaccine was introduced in the U.S. somewhere around 1980 or so, autism rates skyrocketed. The same thing happened in the U.K., except that they introduced the vaccine there 10 years later. It was around 1990. And the autism rates jumped when the vaccine was introduced there, too. So, you know, it happens once, you can call it coincidence. It happens twice. We're not talking coincidence again here. And again, you combine this with all the other collective information showing link between vaccines and autism. There have been recent and past, for that matter, but recent published studies, one concluding that vaccines are a cause of autism, period, end of story. but others saying that the aluminum in vaccines appears to be linked to autism. And another study showing that as vaccine coverage increases, in other words, as more people are vaccinated, autism rates go up. There's a direct correlation. Not proof of a connection, but darn good reason to look more closely to see if you can rule in or rule out the connection. But those studies keep being put off. The National Institutes of Health just recently went public with their position of, we don't need to compare vaccinated to unvaccinated populations because the vaccine program is safe. I hope that's as obviously stupid to everyone listening to me say that as it is to me. We don't need to study vaccinated versus unvaccinated populations because the vaccine program is safe. In other words, let's assume what the answer is going to be and use that as a reason not to see what the answer really is. Let's just pick one side. Let's say the one that favors the pharmaceutical industry. Why not? What the heck? I mean, it's just stupid. It's stupid. And somehow they can say that, and people will actually say, oh, okay, we can go with that. And I don't know why or how. I really don't understand that. It doesn't take even a high school education to hear something like that and say that doesn't make any sense. Yet somehow the arrogance is there for this to continue in that way. But you know what? The Somali immigrants have some information, factual information supporting their concerns beyond what we've already just talked about. Here's another article and study. The title of this article, and this comes from, I'm not sure how this is pronounced, Reuters. U.S.-born kids have more allergies and asthma. Well, kids and teens who are born abroad and who immigrate to the U.S. are about half as likely to have asthma and allergies as those who are born in the U.S. Now, I want to really focus on this study that says half. Because the reality here is that the U.S. is the most heavily vaccinated country in the world for the sole reason that we are the only ones that can afford this many vaccines, in my opinion. We administer in the U.S. twice the number of vaccines as the average of 30 other Western nations, twice the vaccines of 30 other Western nations. So is it any wonder that if we're giving twice the vaccines that the kids who come here from other countries have half the asthma and allergies? And I'm not suggesting there's a direct scientific causal relationship there, but it's certainly that the two figures are consistent with one another. And once again, it just screams loudly for the need for research to be looking directly at this issue. Not to see whether or not there's anything there and just shrug it off, but to determine definitively one way or the other, prove or disprove the connection. We've had fraudulent attempts to disprove the vaccine autism connection in particular. Let's get some transparency on this. Let's get some honesty in the system. Let's find out what's really going on instead of keep doing what somebody wants us to all pretend is going on. But not at all surprised. 80,000 children, researchers surveyed the parents of 80,000 children in one of six languages and found that association held even after they took into account where families lived and how often they moved and as well as their race and income. So, in other words, it's really true that American kids are sicker. Facts taken into account all other factors that could skew the results there. So they're saying that they've done everything the right way to really determine that this is true. The American kids are twice as sick as immigrants, kids who are born abroad and moved to the U.S. And it's very likely that vaccines are a big part of why that does the way it does. I want to remind folks again that at homeopathyworldcommunity.com, You can find tons of information, but in particular is a banner at the top there talking about Dr. Isaac Golden, who's going to be on the Health In show this Monday, May 20th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, talking about treating vaccine-damaged kids, So you don't want to miss that. Go to homeopathyworldcommunity.com, click on the banner there, and that'll there's a link that'll take you to more information about that. And now we're back for the last half hour of today's show. Delighted, as always, to have you with us. You're welcome to call in. The number's at the top of the freedomizerradio.com website. You're also welcome to email me anytime with your questions, and I'll try to answer them on the air if you'd like. Attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. And my contact information is at, and lots of other terrific free information about vaccine rights available at www.vaccinerights.com. Trying to do two things at once here. So I want to get back to some of these different articles we were talking about how U.S.-born kids have more allergies and asthma, and my personal adamant belief that that is directly tied to the fact that we have administered twice as many vaccines as the average of 30 other Western nations. And there's research, statistical analyses showing that countries around the world that have different numbers of vaccines that they administer, in particular to children, that the more vaccines a country administers, the higher its infant mortality rate. This is a correlation. Again, correlation is not proof of causation, but a darn good reason to look into this, to do formal research that would allow you to definitively rule in or rule out the connection. The reason I contend that that kind of research tends not to be done, or to the extent that it's done, it tends to be suppressed or discredited, is simply because what that research would show, if properly done, is something that would undermine not only the entire vaccine policy and law and industry in this country and around the world, but with that would come the unraveling of the allopathic healthcare's dominance of the healthcare arena and healthcare world as well. A lot of very powerful and rich people would lose their positions of power and potentially their wealth in the process. In fact, I think people would and should be criminally prosecuted for the cover-ups that have they have engaged in over recent years and decades. But moving on, let's see, what have we got here? Might have mentioned this before, but if I did, it's worth mentioning again. A congressman has introduced a bill that, if passed into law, would require a study of autism rates in vaccinated versus unvaccinated populations. This is the sort of thing that we keep hearing from health authorities. We don't need it because we know vaccines are fine, therefore we're not going to take a chance on discovering something other than that by actually doing research. That I was so critical of earlier in today's show. This is an article that comes from TheRefusers.com, TheRefusers.com, which, by the way, is also a musical group, a rock band that has written and recorded some of their own songs about the vaccine issue. So something potentially worth looking into if that would be of interest of you, because I'm sure the music is available on their website. TheRefusers.com. There's a comment here, I guess, by the article author. The CDC has refused to study autism rates in vaccinated versus unvaccinated kids because they're a captive agency of the vaccine manufacturers. I agree with that. The former head of the CDC is now the head of Merck Vaccines, and this is not an isolated instance. Dr. Julie Gerberding, who was, I believe she's a doctor, anyway, Julie Gerberding was head of the CDC, director of the CDC, and in December of 2009 she announced, see, this is what gets me about this, not only is there this conflict of interest, but they actually are bragging about it. She announced that she was quitting her position as director of the CDC so she could go become president of Merck Vaccines. there's this revolving door between agency and industry. And what do you think that does to people in the agency when they're trying to make decisions about policy? You know, the CDC is who sets policy. They and another federal agency, the ACIP, these folks set policy for vaccines all over the country. And then states will enact laws, usually very highly consistent with the policy set by the CDC. And if you behave yourself, quote unquote, behave yourself, act the way the pharmaceutical industry wants you to, you can be rewarded by getting a lucrative industry job when you leave the agency. There should be laws that prevent anyone working for the agency with someone employed by a state or a federal health agency from going to work for the pharmaceutical industry, probably ever, but at least for 5 or 10 years after they leave the agency. Nobody should be able to be bribed into serving the industry when your job is to serve the American public. But we have these blatant conflicts of interest. We have groups of people who discuss and decide and set vaccine policy that includes people right out of the industry. According to at least one congressional representative a few years ago, if I remember my sources correctly, that they routinely waive conflicts of interest, so people right out of the industry get to vote on policy that they're going to go back and profit from because they're part of the industry. They try to rationalize all this by saying, well, these are the people who are the experts on vaccines, so that's the only place we can get them. We got to get them. The people in the industry are the ones who are the experts. They should be setting policy. I'm sorry, no, they should not. If they have a conflict of interest, they should have nothing to do with this. But we have this revolving door where people go back and forth between industry and agency, and through that and other means, the industry controls the federal and state health agencies, they're, in other words, the government. They control the policy and law, and laws continue to be enacted, and the truth about vaccines continues to be suppressed so that people needlessly suffer and die for the sake of more profit for the pharmaceutical industry. And there's evidence for other agendas underlying that as well, but you don't have to go any farther than the follow the money syndrome, as I sometimes call it, to see that there are serious problems. But anyway, we have a glimmer of hope here, a bill that if passed into law would require a study comparing autism rates in vaccinated and unvaccinated people. Children who receive the entire 3-shot series of hepatitis B vaccine, according to this article, have 9 times the rate of developmental disabilities than unvaccinated children. The hepatitis B triple series vaccine and developmental disability in U.S. children aged 1 to 9 years, a study with this done in the Toxicology and Environmental Chemistry Journal, 2008 study. Vaccinated children have higher rates of autism and ADHD than unvaccinated children. And this is a survey from Generation Rescue. Vaccinated boys were 155% more likely to have a neurological disorder. Vaccinated boys were 224% more likely to have ADHD. Vaccinated boys were 61% more likely to have autism than unvaccinated kids. So this is pretty pretty disturbing stuff. In other words, there's already information, there's already data out there supporting that there's a problem here. So for somebody to say, oh, we don't need to do that because vaccines are safe, they're lying or they're ignorant. And I don't mean to be rude, but I'm just going to call it like it is. They either don't know the truth or they're being dishonest about it. One of the two. Those are the only two options. This comes from the Honorable Bill Posey, the House of Representatives representative from Florida, Bill Posey. And there was, let me see if I can find it here, because there was another representative, I believe, from New York who joined in on this. So there are some people in the system who want to do the right things, who try to do the right things. You know, let's wish these folks success, because if this is successful, it'll be successful for all of us. I mean, You know, I had a conversation with wonderful gentleman, Dr. Mayer Eisenstein, who's been a family practice medical doctor for somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 years, and he is a non-vaccinating, a rare non-vaccinating medical doctor, and his kids that go through his practice over the years have few or no vaccines, and they don't know of any autism cases they have out of something on the order of around their last estimate, maybe 50,000 kids have gone through their clinics. And statistically, out of 50,000 kids, there would be hundreds of autistic children. I don't have an exact number for you, but it would be several hundred kids should have autism, and they've got none that they know of, and they don't vaccinate. You know, that's not proof, but it is a very, very compelling correlation and begs for studies to look into that to definitively determine what the actual literal role between vaccines and autism is, and not just somebody shrugging it off because, oh, we don't need to do that. To call that irresponsible is an understatement. To call that reasonable is fallacious. To call it what it really is not something I can say over the air, but I will say it is egregious, and I think it's evil. I just don't know what other word for it than evil. So stay tuned, folks. We'll talk about this bill as it works its way through the system, and if there comes a point where we need to have people calling their representatives to vote for this bill and support this bill, we'll do that. But you can contact your congressional representatives now to ask them to co-sponsor the bill. Ask them to get on board with this now. Ask them to get behind it. It's time for the corruption to end. It's time for us to reinvent our world into one that is based on integrity, that is based on true, and I mean this in the broad sense, love and compassion for our fellow human beings, one that believes in and actually provides complete transparency for everyone in government especially, so that what's really going on is clear to everyone at all times, and absolute strictest accountability so that no one is ever tempted to try to get away with something inappropriate again. We have a severely dysfunctional world in systems right now, governmental systems. Not because everybody in the system is bad, probably just a minority of people, but an important minority because it's key decision makers. You know, if your doctor doesn't understand the truth about vaccines, it may not be because the doctor is anything other than an intelligent person of integrity, at least generally. But it may very well be that he's been misinformed because somebody else has taken control of the medical education system in the U.S. and around the world. Let's see if I can move on here to another topic before we run out of time here. I had someone ask a question of me a while back. A parent says the daughter received four-month vaccination shots and weeks later started having muscle spasms that progressed into seizures. She was in the hospital for 3 days. Doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong. She mentioned the possibility that seizures could be related to vaccines, and the doctors didn't even want to comment. That speaks volumes. She says, I'm now afraid to give her more vaccines. How can we exempt from vaccinations? And can we file a lawsuit against the local health department? A couple different questions there. A child in that situation could potentially qualify for a medical exemption. But I want to say, you know, there's a misperception by a lot of people that if you've already exercised an exemption, I mean, if you've already gotten vaccines, you can't have a religious exemption. And that's just legally incorrect. You only have to have two things to qualify for a religious exemption. You have to have a belief that is religious in nature as the law defines that, and it has to be sincerely held. I mean, you shouldn't be able to get a religious exemption if you have beliefs that aren't religious, and you shouldn't be able to get a religious exemption if you have beliefs that aren't real. You don't really believe it. So that's just kind of a common sense thing. Now, the law does not always follow common sense thinking, but on that particular point, it really does. And so states, if they want to, can give themselves the authority to look at your exemption to see whether or not it's religious in nature or sincerely held. Whether or not the state can scrutinize your exemption just depends on the way the laws are written. Some states can, some can't. But they all may, if they choose to give themselves that authority, by passing laws that allow for that. And it only has to be a present belief. You can have had vaccines in the past, but if your beliefs right now are religious in nature and sincerely held and opposed to vaccines, then you qualify for a religious exemption. It's really that simple. If you happen to be in a state where there's a law that says you have to be a member of an organized religion, those laws are unconstitutional, but that's a more difficult situation. You probably need to involve a lawyer to deal with that. If you're in any situation where you have to state your beliefs in writing, you should talk to a lawyer, because most people's common sense approach to that gets them into trouble. The law is just not consistent with common sense, or most people's common sense thinking. So as a prudent step, you should consider talking with an experienced, knowledgeable attorney on the subject. But under the Constitution, which is a higher legal authority than state law, the free exercise of religion in the First Amendment, all it takes is a belief that's religious in nature and sincerely held, and you qualify for a vaccine religious exemption. So now, if somebody has health problems and you qualify for a medical exemption, that's great, but I have seen over and over again in my vaccine exemption waiver law practice where people have by any reasonable measure, a sound medical basis for not getting vaccines, and in many cases have doctors who are recommending it, and yet they still can't get the exemption. This raises a couple different issues at least, but the main point is to remember that just because you have a medical condition that you think justifies not getting a vaccine, that doesn't mean that you're actually going to be able to not get the vaccine. Whether or not you can get by without getting the vaccine for medical reasons is going to depend on what the law says, who has the last word, the doctor or the state. And the answer to that question just varies from state to state. So medical exemptions are difficult to get, but having had vaccines in the past does not prevent you from exercising a religious or philosophical exemption if that's an option in your state or situation. So don't allow that to get in your way. And if someone you're dealing with, a local authority, is telling you something otherwise, call your local health department and ask them, you know, if they'll get involved, or get a hold of an attorney to educate these folks on the law. But don't let anybody bully you into getting a vaccine that you're not legally obligated to get. As for the lawsuit question, how can we be exempt from vaccines, and can we file a lawsuit against the local health department because, you know, a child was damaged by the vaccines? No, you can't, because the federal vaccine injury compensation program that was passed by Congress back in the mid-1980s basically trumps or preempts everything else at the state level. So, and people often ask a similar question at work: if you're required to get a vaccine, is it a workers' compensation issue if you are damaged? And the answer is no. If it's with a vaccine that's listed in the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which, for example, flu vaccines are. So if you're injured, nobody has any liability. You just go to the federal government to see if you can get paid some money to compensate you for your injury. That, of course, leaves the pharmaceutical industry completely unconcerned with creating vaccines that don't cause serious injury or death, or trying to make safer vaccines generally. They have no motivation to do that, because spending the money on that isn't going to gain them anything. You're required to get the vaccines anyway, and they're going to keep making them, and they're going to keep making more vaccines, and they're going to keep pressuring and influencing state and federal governments to require more and more vaccines. And, you know, they've got a great racket there. They're not going to do anything to dip into those absurd profits, absurdly large profits. So we're sort of stuck with it. Again, you know, all of this, I think, ultimately is going to come down to, in large part, becoming legislatively active to pass laws. So everyone should have the right to make an informed choice about vaccines for themselves and their children, period. That's what every state should have a law that says something simple and direct and clear like that. You know, every citizen or resident has the right to make an informed choice about vaccines for themselves and their children, and no government can compel an individual in times of emergency or otherwise to get a vaccine that they don't want for themselves or their children. That's what we need laws to say. We are far from that right now. But that's the goal. In fact, what we really need to do is remove mandates altogether. Vaccines should be nothing more than an opt-in program. Of course, if people were fully informed, I don't think that they'd be opting in at all. But first, we need to get the information out there. We need to have the right to act on the information and to not be compelled by a corrupt government or a well-intending government corrupted by the pharmaceutical industry. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips from Asheville, North Carolina. We've got just a few more moments here. I'm going to close with the full version of the song that opens up the show, which is just part of the song. This is a song that I composed and produced, performed all the instruments, did all the recording and mixing, full production. If you go to pandemicresponseproject.com, you can actually see my first and so far one and only music video with this same song. It's called Destiny Freedom. And again, that's at pandemicresponseproject.com on the homepage in a YouTube video posted there on the homepage, pandemicresponseproject.com. We'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Look forward to having you all there with us.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, within each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath the self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air, the sin screams louder than the finest ever dare. They'll feel your blade with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all the fairer if you'll just die in haste. Let free. freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny.